Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
You're listening to Puma Podcast.
How much time do you spend thinking about food? About not having enough of it or having too much of it? Whether you're eating healthy and what eating healthy even means? Or maybe how your eating habits may be affecting the environment and the climate? The truth is, the choices we make about food and their consequences may seem personal, but they aren't. At least not entirely.
One of the things that seems to me important in thinking about food choice is that the largest public health problems in the world and food system problems are related to food. And these are food insecurity, obesity, and the environmental damage that is caused. The undernutrition affects roughly a billion people in the world. Obesity is said to affect maybe 2 billion people in the world. And environmental damage affects absolutely everybody. And of course, much of that environmental damage comes from our diets that are heavily dependent on meat.
I'm Bella Perez Rubio, Puma Podcast, and you're listening to Teka Teka News.
But I think that for many of us, food is an extremely personal issue. It has to do with what we put in our bodies. It has to do with what we like, what our culture suggests that we eat. But it's also very political in the sense that it has to do with social status, wealth, and power. And it's that dichotomy, the connection between the personal and the political, that I find so interesting in that.
That's Marian Nessel. She's a biologist, nutritionist, and health advocate, best known for her book, Food Politics.
I've tried to study as best I could. And just to give one example, the issue of what to eat is something that just really troubles people. People don't understand what they're supposed to eat. They feel like food is very confusing. Nutritionists are changing their minds all the time about what's important. And I think that's really too bad because I think nutrition advice is so simple that the journalist Michael Pollan can brilliantly do it in 7 words, eat food, not too much, mostly plants. But when I go online and ask the question, what influences choices of food? I get diagrams like this. And if you can't see the slides, this slide has on it everything that you can possibly think of. It's got culture, it's got religion, it's got money, it's got various kinds of social factors, peer pressure. The one thing that it doesn't have is the elephant in the room, which is the influence of the food industry on what we eat, as if the food industry has no influence, as if it just simply doesn't exist.
That shift from personal to political is a lot to process. Here's an example of how that works.
I'm an American, and these are the American Dietary Guidelines from 2015 to 2020. And they say that what you're supposed to be eating is fruits, vegetables, meat, poultry, and other kinds of foods, relatively unprocessed. And what you're not supposed to be eating is what we pejoratively call junk foods, highly processed foods that have a lot of the nutritional value removed that are very high in calories, salt, and sugar.
The problem with that is that if you're going to be dealing with the question of obesity, you want to eat better and eat the kinds of foods that are recommended. You want to eat less in general, and you want to move more. But the problem is that all of those are not particularly good for the food industry. And we have a food industry that is very large, Nestle, that is very large and makes most of its profits from the foods, the exact same foods that are least recommended by public health nutrition people. So this brings us to a lot of ironies in the food system and difficulties with thinking about these things. And so in an environment like this, individual food choice is very, very difficult. For individuals faced with a food environment that's as complicated as this, it's really hard to make healthy food choices.
And by food industry, I'm mainly talking about the consolidated corporations that produce the foods we love, that take up 70% of the supermarket, that are brand names that we adore, that we don't want taken away from us. We love to eat their products. That's who I'm mostly talking about. I've said over and over and over again, food companies are not social service agencies. They are not public health agencies. They are businesses with stockholders to please.
Most people are likely aware that what the world's most successful food companies sell to consumers isn't the healthiest food, not by a mile. But what does that actually look like? When you go out to eat, what kinds of food are you most often met with? What's cheaper? What's more accessible? Sure, there's been a growing push for buying locally and ethically sourced food. But is it realistic? Or how much easier is it to do the opposite, to eat fast food, or buy imported instant goods like Korean ramen to stock at home? Marian's work and research cover food systems, the entire lifespan of food from the time it's produced until it becomes waste. The study is broad and interdisciplinary, covering science, agriculture, nutrition, and public health, to name a few.
Let me turn to what I think are the really important public health nutrition problems, what I think are the really important global food system problems in the world today. And there are three, and that is hunger and malnutrition, billions of people who don't have enough to eat on a daily basis, obesity and the chronic diseases for which it is a risk factor. The environmental effects of the way we produce and consume food, which are enormous, right up there with transportation.
The good news is, Marian doesn't stop at identifying the problems. She studies solutions too. More on that after a quick break. Hi, listeners. Thanks for tuning in to Tekateka News. We're so glad that you do, and we'd love to get to know you better. Our team is hosting a small gathering on May 2 from 6 to 9 p.m. in Makati. If you're free to join us, check out bit.ly/tekadinner for more details. See you there!
Let me talk about triple duty policies. This term, the first time I had ever seen it, came out of a report, two reports in The Lancet in 2019, two very important reports taking a food system approach to three kinds of policies: policies to prevent undernutrition, policies to prevent overnutrition, and policies to prevent climate change. The triple duty part was to design a diet that would address all three at once. That was its purpose. So let me start with the Eat Lancet report. It was the one that got the most attention. And it asked a question: how are we going to feed a burgeoning population that's supposed to reach 10 billion people within some number of years and keep within planetary boundaries, keep that the diet without making climate change worse? And the answer that they came up with was the planetary health diet, which they said would require people in developed countries, industrialized countries, to eat half as much meat and twice as many vegetables. In other words, to replace meat in the diet with plant foods, fruits, vegetables, grains, beans, in that way. A big change in the diet, really big change. And part of the reason for that was the influence of meat on health, but by far the major reason was because of the influence of animal raising, particularly beef cattle, on climate change. This kind of diet would do triple duty. It would solve three problems at once. The meat industry didn't like it. A surprise. Lots of other people didn't like it too, but I'll just stick with the meat industry on this one. They didn't like it. Fundamental lack of agricultural understanding, radical, irresponsible, the usual kinds of things.
While countries like the U.S. struggle with obesity and an overabundance of food, the World Food Program, a UN agency struggling with funding cuts, says we are in the midst of a hunger crisis. Even in the U.S., around 44 million Americans struggle with food insecurity. It's a clear example of just how complex our problems with food and food policy are worldwide. In the Philippines, our most pressing food issue is clear. We don't have enough of it. Around 51 million Filipinos, nearly half of our entire population, struggle with irregular access to food, according to a United Nations report. But the food industry continues to block proposed solutions in service of their bottom line.
The report got an enormous amount of negative publicity in that following week. Because of that negative publicity, I think in part, this report got completely ignored. The second report was in some ways, I think, much more important because it dealt with the politics. It too took a food systems approach to dealing with hunger, obesity and chronic diseases, and climate change. It rooted the problems of hunger, obesity and climate change in what they called consumptogenic economic systems. That's a euphemism for capitalism.
What she's saying here is that the food industry, like many others, is now extremely skewed towards corporations and not consumers. Profit drives every major decision, and governments can't regulate effectively. That means companies are free to cut costs to sell food for cheap by refusing to take into account extremely important considerations like health and climate change. Instead, consumers pay the price later, at the doctor, at the gym, or when the further warming of the planet makes weather disasters more frequent.
They called for a transformative social movement to fix that. That was their call. And I thought that was pretty impressive. I never read that in The Lancet before. I don't know about anybody else. But this is the first time I had seen that in a medical journal of that stature, to have something like that in there. I thought it was really impressive. And more than that, they established a roadmap for food industry regulation. And their roadmap included such things as stopping subsidies for corporations, stopping tax breaks for corporations, making them reveal conflicts of interest, stopping them marketing to children, just full stop, requiring corporations to pay the externalized costs, health and environmental, keeping corporations out of public policy, making them disclose their political donations and where they were putting their money, and then holding companies accountable for the damage that they were causing.
And that was today's episode of Tekateka News. Again, I'm Bella Perez Rubio. Pidoy Blanco edited this episode. Our executive producer is Jill Caro, and our senior news editor is Veronica Uy. If you found this episode useful, share it with a friend or two, and thanks for listening.